What does a man, the former chef of a place people practically worship, what does he think of home cooking? Chef David Tanis was raised in the house of Chez Panisse. David went from humble fill-in baker to heading the Chez Panisse kitchens on and off for more than 25 years. Well, he finally left to write, among other things, the City Kitchen column for the New York Times. His latest book is One Good Dish. It's a book about intimate, simple cooking at home. Our contributor, J.J. Good, met up with David in New York.
Hi, David. Thanks so much for being here.
J.J., so nice to be here. Thank you.
I think it's hard for a lot of us who got into food, say, 10 or 20 years ago, to imagine how novel a restaurant like Chez Panisse was when you worked there, because I think today so many restaurants sort of embrace the Chez Panisse ethos. What made it so different then when you started working there?
Back in the dark ages?
Back in the dark ages. How long ago was it?
Well, actually, this is still the dark ages. I think I began working there in the 80s. The restaurant opened in the early 70s, at which point I was already sort of friends with Alice and a lot of people that worked there. But, you know, there weren't any restaurants like that at that point. There wasn't any great produce to be had. There were good home cooks. There were some high-end sort of continental restaurants, and I mean continental, with quotation marks around it. Then there was like the San Francisco Fisherman Wharf type restaurant. But as far as honest cooking and something that wasn't high French. It was, you know, sort of peasant French and, you know, run by a bunch of really smart college dropouts.
Was it?
Yeah, essentially. They weren't all dropped out, but essentially, you know, people whose parents imagined they would go on to, you know, careers as lawyers and doctors. And they said, let's open a restaurant.
All right. And so you found your way there. Had you been cooking beforehand in restaurants?
Yeah, I had some restaurant experience before I worked at Chez Panisse, and at the point when I began working there, I was working as a baker, as a bread baker. That's the way I got in, actually. I'd known Alice for years, but she wasn't that interested in hiring me for whatever reason. But when the bread baker went on vacation, at that point they were making all their own bread in-house, I substituted for him while he was gone.
Sneaky.
And then I sort of like stayed. And then over the years, over the course of 25 years or more, I would have stints at Chez Panisse for you know, short periods, and then go off to New Mexico for a period and then come back and then go to Paris for a period and then come back. And
so that's an interesting, that's how it was the whole time? You kind of asking Alice for a little leave?
It's just kind of the way things worked out. But when you talk about Chez Panisse as being a novel kind of restaurant, it still is.
It still is.
Because of that kind of flexibility. I asked for a raise one year, and they said, no, we're going to send you to Europe for 3 months. and it was, you know, it was an eye-opening experience for me. And that kind of flexibility is something that is part of the culture there.
Right. And at some point, you developed a really interesting arrangement with Alice or and the restaurant?
In the last few years. I mean, now that arrangement has sadly finished because I'm now beginning to figure out what I should be when I grow up, and I decided to leave Chez Panisse and move forward or onward. But for a number of years, I would split the job of the downstairs chef, downstairs being the slightly fancier restaurant, upstairs being the cafe, with Jean-Pierre Moulet, who also had worked there. Actually, he started before I did.
Whoa.
But I was living in Paris at the time, so I would come from Paris to California, spend 6 months. When I was there, he would go, he's French, he would go to Bordeaux and spend the summer at Arcachon. And so we would flip that way. But the whole idea of having two chefs is something that Alice was always interested in because, well, for one thing, it meant that there were more voices in the conversation. Essentially,
right.
So that, and I actually completely believe in that. You end up with a better product, you know, because I'm all for somebody having a better idea than me.
Right.
You know, or we bat it back and forth, and suddenly from a good dish, it becomes a great dish.
You remember any dishes that took shape that way? Any particular dishes or too many to count?
Too many to count.
Too many to count. So at some point, you finally decided to leave. Altogether, as you said, to figure out what you wanted to be when you grew up. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I don't know, but I thought a little break from the professional kitchen would be good. I'm actually I'm really passionate about home cooking, and in the past several years, I've been writing cookbooks. But the cookbooks are not they're meant for home cooks. They're not fancy sort of chefy cookbooks at all, because I really think that one of the saddest things about modern times is that people don't know how to cook anymore, and people don't cook at home. I mean, that's a sort of broad generalization, but
right.
I think it could be said to be true, especially in the U.S.
Right.
So it's important. Things begin to unravel when people don't cook at home. I don't know why.
So I noticed in your new book, there are several recipes that call for only three or four ingredients: a radish salad with creme fraiche, garlic rub toast. Is there a challenge in writing recipes that are that simple?
Well, it's true that everything in the book is a simple recipe. There are hardly any that any recipes that are more than, it's pretty much one recipe, one page, and they're short. That's the kind of cooking that I think people can be doing at home. Every meal doesn't have to be, sort of a big orchestra. There can just be a little tune that you sing at home at night when you're cooking for yourself. Even when I was working in restaurants, I would always come home and make something for myself after a shift. I didn't like eating during work. So I'd come home at 11:30, midnight, and make a bowl of pasta, but a really delicious bowl of pasta. So those are the kinds of things that are in this book. This book is saying, maybe you don't have time to do a three-course meal, but you certainly have time to make one good dish. You know, the process isn't difficult. You smell the olive oil, you smell the garlic.
Right.
You make it taste right. Then you sit down and you eat it, whether it's yourself or yourself and a friend or a few people. It doesn't have to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, David.
JJ, thank you.
David Tanis is author of One Good Dish. J.J. Good is co-author with Andy Ricker of Pock Pock. Well, David left us with a recipe for scorched peppers and onions, and you can find it on the website splendidtable.org.